Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
Now, it is the midpoint of the year, so we're doing all sorts of best and worst and most disappointing and most surprising video games. But I want to kick things off with something negative, because I got hardly any sleep last night. So, whatever. So let's do the most disappointing games. We've came together and we've put together a list of about seven-ish games.
Yes.
That we're just going to sort of rattle through. But I'm going to start with an honourable mention. Two of them, actually. One for Crackdown 3, because we never even thought that was going to be any good in the first place.
I had some expectations. Of Terry Crews. Terry Crews makes everything better.
He was latched on in the last like 2 months.
And that's when I got interested in him. I didn't actually know it was
coming out.
Were
you let down by Terry Crews?
Oh, I wasn't let down by him personally. Although there's that lovely thumbnail image that we've used a few times of him.
Where he's like
very sad.
Out.
Yeah. And I feel like he maybe took it a bit personally. And then again, also, he's been very quiet on it. So maybe he doesn't care at all.
I don't think he cares. I mean, he's barely in it. Like, he's in the opening cutscene. You can play as him. He barely says anything. And then that's it.
Yeah, I think pure speculation, but I assume he did a day's work on it and then was like, okay, I'll collect my check and go away now, guys.
That's always genuinely what it feels like. And the other thing I've got down is Fallout 76, which I thought was this year, but turns out it was last year.
No, it's just been an ever-long slog.
Just the continual disappointment of Fallout 76.
I mean, what you could do is put the game on last year's most disappointing and the roadmap on this year's.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Pretty much every dev doing a roadmap can just kind of get in the bin.
They're the most disappointing.
I just don't think any of the... I've not enjoyed travelling any of these roadmaps. I don't know if you guys have.
Well, no, because the road is still... You get there and it's still under construction.
I was gonna say,
there's
it's
a big chasm
road.
That you just have to fall into and then hope they dig you out and then start building it properly.
You know when you go over a speed bump that's a little bit too much and you go, oh God, it's that. Yeah. That's video games.
No, that's what they try and sell it as. It's like, oh, there's a few potholes, but don't worry, it's a consistent thing. It's like, no, this goes into a portal to another dimension where cars aren't even irrelevant.
Speaking of a portal to another dimension where things aren't even relevant, Jump Force is our number one.
Wow, what
pick,
a segue.
Which is a big bag of something I can't say on the podcast channel.
I had to review this game I was so, so disappointed because I'm a huge DBZ fan and I'm a huge One Piece fan and I was just looking forward to having a game that looked at the time in the footage that we'd seen looked great into a 3-on-3 brawler and I thought that this could be like a new sort of, and we've had DBZ fighters, haven't we?
So there was a
sense of expectation that this was going to be a 3D version of that, but it was just cack.
I remember when just cack. I remember when we played it at what was the thing we went to, was it EGX?
We went to EGX
EGX, and I remember when they let us do a hands on thing and I remember because I think you'd ran off down the conference, the big hall, and you were like, oh, they've actually got Jump Force.
Yeah.
And I went down, and I thought I was so worried after playing that. I was like, it's not shaping up well at all. Because they had Naruto, they got Goku and Vegeta, everybody from all these major anime franchises. But it's playing it that is the worst thing.
Yeah, it was just lifeless. And the worst thing was, is that, like, the bless the people at Bandai Namco, they sent us over the collector's edition of it, like, big
one. The statue's good.
And it's amazing, like, it's fantastic. I got home, installed it, I was really hyped to play it. Clicked on the story mode, and, like, you know that, that scene from Troll 2 where it's just like, oh my God. Yeah. It was that continuously for about 3 to 4 hours.
Which could
hours.
Be fun, but it's like, I don't know if you've seen the cutscenes, Josh, but like,
I have, yes.
There's no animation. Just stock still, like PS2, nodding your head as they talk.
The thing that will probably, like, everyone knows by now is the bit where Freezer just goes like, ha ha, I will see you later. And literally just lifts up out of the ground like goddamn
my planet
Poochie.
Needs me.
Like there's nothing, no weight change, there's no nothing. They would literally like click and drag him
you
straight
up. That's it, like they made it in Dreams where they just sort of took the asset and moved it up and recorded it. Jump Force is didn't land very well.
No, and I can see why, because it was not just the bad cut corners that were cut with mm-hmm. the presentation. It was the gameplay itself. It felt incredibly shallow, and I feel like they put a lot of visual flair onto the moves, but there was no... There's no rock, paper, scissors to that game. Like, that's the whole point of a good fighting game. You find your counterbalances and ways to get around it. Mm-hmm. In this one, every character felt the same, even though they did different moves under different names. Yeah. They all did the same amount of damage. Everything was kind of fixed.
It was just like weirdly loose. Did you play any game?
Well, this is the thing. For me, I come to fighting games only once in a while for Mortal Kombat and Dragon Ball Z, even though I'm not good at them. I've got it, mate.
Thanks.
When's Dan and Price? But this interested me, obviously, because of the crossover appeal. But even when it was first announced, I think maybe in E3 or something like that, I just thought, ooh, I've been burnt by these games before. Yeah. You know, you can tell that the presentation just isn't quite there. Like you said, corners have been cut, and I thought, it's getting me in because of the just general interest level, but everything about it is screaming to me, this could go terribly wrong. And I gave it the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you came in and were like, it's not great. And Scott was like, it's a pile. And I was like, no.
It's an absolute pile. I mean, like, well, go on.
I'm just going to say, the worst thing is that there was a market gap to be filled because Marvel vs. Capcom, they dropped the ball with Infinity. And I was like, okay, cool. Maybe Jump Force is going to be the thing to replace that because DBZ Fighters, like that was going to be there. Fighters Z, whatever you want to call it. And so I was like, this is going to be great. And it just,
I want a resurgence of the brawler genre because Def Jam Fight for New York is my favorite games of all time. I remembered it when I was doing something.
Throwing Snoop Dogg in front of a train. Who doesn't want to do
that? I know. And you can play as like Sean Paul or whatever you want to do. Although I think maybe they ditched him for the sequel. Mr. Paul. But that game had such great like 3D brawling mechanics, chucking people into walls and windows and everything else. Just give me that style of arena style combat. There was a game called Marvel Rise of the Imperfect.
Not
the best, but there was a whole time back in the 2000s.
It's Power Stone. Power Stone is the king of the party brawler. Like, it's Power Stone and Power Stone 2 on the Dreamcast. If you've not played it,
who owned the Dreamcast, mate? You.
Stop this.
Who owned it? You and Ewan. No one owned it.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, it didn't do well. Obviously, no one needs to stick the knife in 25 years later. But
it's been in since Sega launched it. But
I'm waiting for the Sega Dreamcast Mini. That's what I'm waiting for.
I'll probably get that.
Yeah, exactly. Because then there will literally only be 20 games or so that are worth playing on that console.
Project Gotham. What was that driving one? I'm doing this now with the wheel.
Wasn't it? There's a lot of driving games.
There was a driving game that was on Dreamcast that was set up on a demo unit back in like 97, and it was a thing.
And of course I know that.
Well, you should. As one of the four people who had the thing. Anyway, let's move on to the next game. I've got Travis Strikes Again No More Heroes, which I think only I played from you guys.
I did not play it because of the fact that it looked so abjectly different from the... I'm a huge fan of the No More Heroes franchise. And I literally just said, no, I'm not playing this one because when they kind of shot themselves in the foot a lot when they were just going like, boom, it's Switch exclusive. And I was like, ooh, okay, fine. That's an interesting choice. Mm-hmm. But then again, so were the No More Heroes 1 and 2 until they ported them over to the PS3. And I was like, interesting. And then it was like, it's going to be top-down isometric shooter. And I was like, ooh, hard pass.
Because beforehand, it was a 3D brawler. Like, you had that whole, like, makeshift, not a lightsaber thing.
Yeah.
And it was, where is it?
The beam
saber. What do you call the dude, the main, is it?
Travis Touchdown.
No, the main creative director. It's not.
Suda 51.
Suda 51.
And his grasshopper
is the... Suda 51, because I get him confused with Swery, because they're both, like, very quirky, awesome dudes. And, but yeah, like, you sort of take the original formula of those first games, and the new one, the references, it should be a love letter to everything that we love about video games, because there's a whole mechanic in that game where you're just unlocking a series of indie game t-shirts and they have everything from like Fury to Meat Boy to whatever, and it's all these references and it's all really well written. There's a whole text based thing in it, but it plays like complete cack because it's all top down and the animations are really repetitive, and that's it to it.
All they needed to do is, if they're going to center it in the video game universe, much like how they lampooned sort of action films and gratification of violence in the first two games, all they needed to do was just have different styles of it. Like,
which is what they tried to do, but
they chose the wrong styles. I feel like there's very easy ways of making a video game about video games and not just doing, I don't know, it felt really like lackluster. Like the idea was there, but not much thought was put into it.
The whole idea of Touchdown being like being zipped into this like new hot new console and then he like goes into different genres, but they were all nigh on the same,
That's what I felt.
It was just a bit meh. But yeah, the next one I've got down is Rage 2, which I don't know how much you guys agree, but I thought Rage 2 was a categorical misfire.
I've had to listen to Rich Hudson try and argue with himself about this game, and it's really interesting. It's like watching a man pull himself apart at the seams, because he's like, oh, it looks really nice, but I don't really like how it's so shallow. But the gunplay when it's on is really good, but there's not really much to do outside of it. But you can dress up your car in different skins. but there's nowhere to buy other skins and do it. So yeah, it was like, it's weird.
Me and him both bought it at midnight. I can't, it's my continual battle in this life is to fight the itch that I must play everything at midnight. So like when Rage 2 was like, when I could preload, I was like, I'm gonna preload Rage 2. And I'm getting on the conversation, like, you know, don't shake your head at me, Josh Brown.
There was no conversation, Scott, is all I'm saying.
There wasn't, but I had a conversation between me and one other person that might play it when I get back in at 9 a.m. that next morning. And so I ended up buying Rage 2, and immediately you could feel that it was like you said, it's just really lackluster. Mm. Like all the best parts of it, which is the core gunplay, they just cut it off because they've made it all open world. It's a whole bunch of outposts to clear out. And every time the combat is just about to click, you're done and go drive somewhere else. And it just doesn't have any sense of flow to it.
It's one of those games that would really benefit from being a leveled structure. That's why I thought that Rage, the first one, was only good when you were storming through the quite level designed outpost bases. It was a fairly decent game. The gunplay in it was great, but it just felt a bit lackluster in the story.
That's kind of the thing with it, though, because the more you... Like, it's weird trying to exemplify what makes the Rage franchise, because like the idea of like open world Doom with like some of the combat from the Mad Max games or whatever is a really good idea. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, if you start making it more corridor based or level focused or whatever, then it kind of just becomes Doom again. Like, obviously minus aesthetically or whatever, but like the way that id do shooting, they do one specific type of shooting supremely well. And so like, it was like, I don't know what I would want from it. I don't know how I'd fix it, because the stuff that I don't like, if you took it away, it wouldn't even be Rage anymore.
This was the like the biggest disappointment of the year so far for me, because I was genuinely looking forward to it. I really enjoyed Rage 1. I got that for £10 and it might be the best £10 I've ever spent. But and so I was looking forward to this. I'm really excited, was going to buy it day one, and then the preview started coming out, and then I got Scott's first impressions, and I just thought, oh no, how has this gone wrong? Because like you said, you've got id shooting in an open world with the Mad Max devs doing all the driving stuff. And Andrew W.K. on the trailer?
Yeah, he's in the credits. He's got to be in there somewhere.
Well, is he though?
Yeah, like, well, I don't know.
I feel like the atmosphere and the vibrancy of those trailers didn't necessarily translate to the actual game itself, which was quite mundane and by the numbers.
It was very like spreadsheet
uninspired,
wacky.
They had to try and compete with Borderlands, because the fact that Borderlands has got that sort of like wasteland wacky down, and I just felt that they were just going, oh god, like Borderlands has already done half of the stuff that we want to do. How do we do anything more? I know, let's just be ironic and weird and I think. And every new trailer that came out, I was invested less and less, because at first I was like, this is colourful. This could just be a really cool shooter. And now it just wants to be Suicide Squad.
And it's like stuff like Suicide Squad or in gaming, something like Agents of Mayhem, where it's like they're trying really hard to be really off-kilter and wacky. And it's like, I'm doing a whole thing at the minute on like trends and formulas that we're sick of. And I think that style of writing is one of the most overdone things.
Yes.
Even Mass Effect Andromeda had like hints of it, where every character was like, I got this. And they're all like trying to make jokes about stuff. But yeah, Rage 2, even the opening tutorial and the whole rest of it, it's a bag. It's a big old apocalyptic.
Very funny what you said, that when Rage 1 came out, the biggest competition was Borderlands, and that completely overshadowed it. Although it had like a different tone back then, people were still saying, well, it's just a boring Borderlands. And now both franchises went away. Now they're coming back at the same time, and now people are going, well, I've got Borderlands 3 at the end of the year, so I don't need to buy Rage 2.
Pretty much. The next thing down...
By the way, sorry, mate, you missed out the joke, which was Snorderlands.
I went with Boring Lands, which is just as bad.
And the joke King says, which point is he giving it to?
Snorderlands.
Thank you very much. Ding, ding, ding.
That is fine. I will also recognise Josh being the joke king as the fellow take judge, or whatever I am. Jules, you played Left Alive, which was a massive... words that I can't say.
Again, I wanted to really like this
game. It's got Yoji Shinkawa's artwork.
Oh, and it's
why is my boy
beautiful.
Doing bad stuff?
It is so beautiful. And the concept of it is actually really interesting, that basically you're in a besieged city that's been ambushed. There's constant like sort of proxy wars going on.
He loves proxy wars.
Yeah. But basically they're in this case, you have been trapped in the middle, you're fighting for one side, your allies have pulled out, and you've just got to survive. That's for you players as one character. Then there's another character who's like a police officer there, who's got to go searching for like missing things. All of these things have really interesting personal narratives, but the gameplay was absolutely abysmal. I think that if you're going to make a stealth game, make a stealth game. Don't make a game that is like, he's over there behind that box 5 miles away. It's like, how did you know? It's like, oh.
Reminds me of Hitman Absolution, where they were like, the new disguise system, and if you dress like a construction worker, then no other construction, let all the construction workers, you'll blend in with most of them, but some of them have elite vision, and they'll just see you from across the entire city block. You go, he's over there. And it's like, you couldn't possibly have known that it was me.
A great example of when I realized that this was not an enjoyable experience was on either the second or third level, and I was playing as this female police officer, and you go and meet this guy in a barn, and the guy goes like, they're coming. They've set an ambush. It's a trap. You shouldn't have come in here. And I'm like, okay. And then at the top corner, I see checkpoint save. And I was like, okay, interesting. interesting. And then the character goes, there's three of them coming in. I turn around and three heavily armed security guards come in. They outclass me on weapons, defense, everything. I cannot kill them. The amount of stuff I've got in my inventory, because you scavenge everything, I didn't have enough. I had a metal pipe. I died 15 times trying to do it until I thought to myself, I know what I'll do. As soon as the checkpoint reloads again, I'll run upstairs up this ladder and I'll just hide out. Mm-hmm. Starts to work. See the little the alert level dissipate. And I'm like, I'm an absolute genius. I'll pop down and I'll do that. I move one step forward and they just go, he's up there, and literally start throwing grenades up at me. I was like, and the grenades landed like whoop, right where I was. So I was like, you guys are just, you know what? You've won this.
Just wipe out the entire resistance. I am done.
I hated it. Like that, it really got me down because like there are elements of that game that are really interesting. The anime design is pretty weird, future tech stuff. The story was interesting enough, and I felt like there was a good direction of the art style, but just gameplay
address as well. Like I said, like Yoji Shinkawa is on the artwork, which is like Metal Gear Solid's main art director. Yeah. If you look up Yoji Shinkawa, you'll know his artwork.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, great guy. And it's like Left Alive. It seems to be came from Square Enix. Like
it did.
What was that stupid thing? The Quiet Man? I know that was from last year.
Yeah, The Quiet Man.
But it's like Square Enix have these weird little, like they'll sack off Hitman and let IO like leave with that. Oh, but we're going to have The Quiet Man and then Left Alive, which are horrific.
But this is what we were talking about before. I actually will defend Square Enix for their choice and their right to do this because we have had many discussions about publishers who aren't willing to take a risk.
True.
They are putting new IPs out all over the place. They're trying. It's just a shame that they shouldn't really bundle them as full priced games, in my opinion. I feel like they should be saying this is the B team, guys. Like,
It's just with Left Alive though. Like, obviously you had Yoji Shinkawa, and like, a lot of the screenshots show mechs. And there's one of the screenshots has like some like sort of nighttime infiltration of a big old base with some spotlights, and there's a mech that he's heading towards. And I was like, it's hopefully gonna scratch the Metal Gear itch, and it didn't at all. It just sort of walked away from it and couldn't even like, I don't know, provide anything that was remotely worthwhile.
Yeah, so it was a real shame because there was a lot of promise in that game, and I feel like if they ever came back for a sequel, I would really hope that they'd fix the problems because a lot of people were just like, oh, there's a good game underneath here. It's just buried in a load of cack.
Nearly all of the ones here were like, oh, conceptually, could have gone somewhere, could have been a thing, but it plays like...
Well, that's why they're disappointing and not outright bad, eh?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
We'll do a separate worst one. So the next one down, this might be slightly controversial, but I've got The Division 2, which is more of a personal pick for me.
Not played this one.
Josh?
Yes,
sir?
I have played it. Okay. Conflicted on this one, again, because, you know, there's a great concept in there, and I like The Division 1, and I love this version of Washington, D.C., in this kind of weird dystopian future-ish setting. But man, it's just fast food. It's just inject it into my veins for a little bit. Let me get the endorphin rush of getting a new gun or popping off a mission. But once that's done and I've turned off the console, I forget it all.
Absolutely.
It just dissipates in my mind.
Yes.
And then I could go back to it now because I didn't actually finish the main campaign and play it and have a good time. Mm. But man, I'm not going to remember afterwards, which is such a shame.
That's the thing. I question how, like, that's the thing. Like, I've started referring to it as, like, mastication for the thumbs. Yeah. Mastication is when cows just chew grass for long enough that they can digest it.
Turn it into cud.
Yeah. This is a cud game. Like, it's its own separate genre, be cud. And it's just like, that's the thing with this. It's like, you can go play it and you can shoot some dudes. It's the exact same control scheme as the first time. And it just does feel like you're wasting time. You're not going to get anything worthwhile from it. And I just thought that they would do something else, either with the control scheme or with, like, maybe the teamwork mechanics, the group mechanics or whatever, and it was more of the same to like a painful degree. I know a lot of people really like it, and I can totally see why, but for me it was disappointing because you look at those original releases and trailers for the first Division and they have a really cool idea, and I just thought they would do more with it. It's so baseline, like that's, lowest common denominator
that's stuff. Just really sad because I played the first one when all the DLC came out and got like that gold package or whatever it was, and I actually really enjoyed my time with it, even though the player
they're
base
really,
was sort
they're
of
solid
like
games,
but
like,
if this is just the exact same, then I don't really feel like I'm going to add anything
to it. Well, that's it. I was exactly same. I played the first game for about 30 hours. I didn't actually invest in the end game, but I played it on my own, played it single player, had a decent enough time, finished it, had a really good Easter week, I remember playing that for, and then I got this expecting the same thing, and then realized, it fundamentally sort of is the same again.
That's
I'm getting
shame.
The exact same experience I had 2-3 years ago, however long it was.
And that's the thing.
Sad.
Yeah, that's kind of thing with Ubisoft is that like obviously we know that they reuse templates and formulas and stuff quite a lot, but this did feel like glorified DLC.
Yeah.
To the point where like you are just sort of checking in with different mission givers or whatever. Like it was all very stale. Sometimes I kind of do that Principal Skinner thing where I'm like, is it me is this actually like lackluster?
Have the kids changed? No, the kids are out of touch.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you know what? I would have gone back to it, but I was playing it on playing it on the original Xbox, and for some reason I just looked and played like crap. Like right. The frame rate kept tanking, visual popping all over the place. It looked very jagged. If I had a PlayStation 4 Pro copy or something, and like maybe it was more visually consistent, that might have engaged me more. But I just thought, oh man, this world that they've created is so great. I love the scale of it. I love the atmosphere of it. I love the way it looks. Just the game is tanking every time I get into a fight, and the missions are repetitive. And I just thought, I'm fighting against this to have fun. And maybe they fixed it now. And maybe, you know, it's my fault for playing it in single player, because there was a point where I just stopped having fun because I kept dying over and over again. And that is on me, because it is sort of built for multiple people. But then...
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Don't give me the option, man. Don't
advertise it as like, oh, you can play it single player. Yeah. You can't. Like, if you go down, there's no one to revive you and you're stuck. You can equip a thing that'll auto-revive you, but if you use that once and get shot again, which like, and it kills you, which it'll happen because you're fighting stuff that's like levels above you, you're just boned again. Like, trying to play those things single player is the biggest like fallacy that they've ever put out, because it's not remotely fun. Actually, we can talk about that for a second. What about those games that, obviously you can tell that they're trying to sell you on that one big consistent loop of like, get the loot, use the loot, keep exploring, keep crafting, keep doing this stuff. How much do you guys gravitate towards that stuff? Because I think Ubi have, like, for the people that this works for, that's totally the track that they're on, but not for me.
I would be lying if I said that I don't fall into that gameplay loop all the time, because I have played every single Dynasty Warriors game.
Do they have crafting and stuff, though?
Yeah, they've got weapon crafting, they've got leveling up, literally crafting boats, and even a palm tree and a stone column in one game.
Can you hit someone with a palm tree?
Yes, you can.
Can we do a series where you just explain Dynasty Warriors to me? I haven't played it since the first three.
Oh, yes. Well, we will sit down and walk through. I tell you what, you know that 24-hour live stream thing that we were talking about? We want to play the Metal Gear ones. We've just changed it.
if you listen to this in the comments.
Bleeding by the end.
Les, what do you think of playing all the Metal Gears in a row in one sitting? Anyway, carry on.
So I feel like I do fall for that gameplay loop quite a lot. And in fact, I do seek it out in games like Diablo. If I know that there's some sort of like dungeon crawling aspect with character building and progression, and it's all determined by randomized loot, I love that. I feel like that's, I feel like that's, it scratches an itch of just growth.
Continual progression or whatever. I used to like that.
It's why I'm like getting really into Crypt of the Necrodancer again now, because I know that doesn't have like character progression, personal progression in that sense, but it has that thing of you're getting better each time and I'm locked in.
That gameplay centric stuff is what I think something like Breath of the Wild nailed, where you have all your abilities at the beginning, but you're not a good hero until like a few hours in. That's what I want to see more games doing, as opposed to like here's some higher stats, but the gameplay is the same.
Yeah.
For me, it kind of works. Stuff like The Division or even Days Gone this year, I played that for 50 hours and really enjoyed the same gameplay loop of, you know, scavenging, getting crafting materials, making me a better survivor. And The Division kind of had that, but it just, again, I'd experienced it before in The Division 1, which was the problem. But I think there's a definitely space for what I like to call podcast games, where you can just like engage in the loop and put something else in the background. Yeah. And that sounds really damning, but they're so mechanically driven anyway that I don't really need to take anything in like from the story-wise or from like the voice acting or anything like that. I can just put a podcast on and engage in this loop that is feeding my endorphins and popping off, you know.
The weirdest thing that they've managed to hone in on. Like, it's the video game equivalent of twiddling your thumbs. Like, it's something, it's a fidget spinner. It's something to do. Which like is the weirdest, like that shouldn't be appealing, and like it kind of is, but it isn't. You mentioned Days Gone. When I asked you last time if you liked Days Gone, your word was F Days Gone.
Well, Days Gone will be on my favorite games of the year list, right?
Really?
But
you have the most like abusive relationship with it. It's the most like twisted thing.
It's because Days Gone is the exact same thing. It's just so much video game, and by the time I was done, I was slogging through it just trying to get to the end. Yeah. And then I thought, I've had my fill of video games. I didn't play anything for about 3 weeks afterwards.
I came back on my honeymoon. You hadn't played anything?
No, because I freaked out on Days Gone, pun intended. It was just like so much. It was like that loop over and over and over again. And it was satisfying. But then at some point, you just kind of burn out on it. Like, it was a podcast game. Yep. But the podcast had gone on for too long, man. Yeah. That's it what should I'm have saying, ended like, 20 hours earlier.
Consider me burnt out on that formula. Like, the craft to explore to craft. Like, I think I'm completely done on that stuff. I think Ubisoft do one of the best versions of it. But yeah, that was the thing that for The Division 2 kind of dragged me down. Next thing up and down is Team Sonic Racing, which was one of Jules' picks, but I totally concur.
Now, this is the definition of disappointing, because you literally had a game at its pure perfection with Team All-Stars Racing Transformed. Yep. That may well be, if there is a top three of, you know, like, you know, your Mario Karts, your Crash Team Racers, your Diddy Kongs and whatever, like, I would actually, personally, for how much enjoyment that I got out of it, it is up there with Crash Team Racing and Mario Kart in terms of the enjoyment that I got with my friends and the racing mechanics, being able to transform your vehicle on the, like, going through different things. I felt that the speed and the aggression of that game was perfectly balanced. Mm-hmm. So how have they managed to take all of that goodwill, and all they needed to do was technically add in new tracks and a few new characters.
And widen the roster a bit.
That's all they needed to do, and yet they have just burned it. They've instead of trying to distill the essence, they've set fire to the goddamn thing, stomped on it a few times and gone, oh crap, that's what
I guess we'll sell it anyway. I mean, like, the thing that they happened onto, which is obviously what Mario Kart started to do, is when Mario Kart side, they bring all the other Nintendo characters in. Great idea on Sega's part to do that too, and they had that in, the All-Stars were just the rest of the Sega roster, the guy from Jet Set Radio or whatever. And like, do more of that. That was the thing. Yeah. That was the thing you were supposed to be keeping to do. And then you had all these other vehicles as well, like the boats and the planes. But Team Sonic Racing is the most distilled, watered down version of that thing. It's just basic kart racing with like only the Sonic roster.
Yeah.
Which, like, how many Sonic characters can we name between us right now? Sonic, Tails, Knuckles.
Shadow.
Yep.
Cream.
Yep.
Big the Cat.
Yep.
I'm out.
Good.
The Gate Vector.
Eggman. No idea.
That's the cat.
Eggman Robotnik, we've got about seven.
He's the Gator Vector, I think.
Okay, we're eight. That green one?
Charmy B.
Yeah, nine.
Werehog Sonic. Does that count?
Yeah, the Werehog.
The point Shadow being is that we're struggling to remember these things.
Whereas you could just look at a Sega roster and just
go, I know where that person is from.
Yeah, give me like a Kazama Kiryu from Yakuza in a little car.
Yeah.
Like flying around. You can do so much with the wider Sega roster. But yeah, Team Sonic Racing, I have to, completely cynically for me, I think they named it Team Sonic Racing because they couldn't call it Sonic Team Racing, as in Crash Team Racing. Yeah. But they totally just tried to get out ahead of Crash by a couple of weeks to get in on that whole potential zeitgeist.
The thing is, there are some elements of the game that are interesting. Like, yes. I really like the fact that the idea of racing as a team and pulling your team up using boosts and driving in their system, I think that's a really good touch. Totally. But it should have just been an additional feature, because it feels like the rest of the game, as a result, is slow.
It feels so threadbare. Like,
there's one type of car. I'm sorry, but it's the best car. Yeah. It's the best car because it's the one that drives over all environments the same. Mm-hmm. If you've got a car that renders environmental hazards as completely useless, how can you beat that? How can you beat this? Kind of like, oh, I have to take a corner really wide to avoid this ice puddle. Just kind of like, nah, see you later.
What vehicle is this?
It's me driving. Paddling. I'm punching through.
Flintstones like feet.
And then the reward system is like this weird little gacha thing where you're sort of like, it's not loot boxes. But you're getting little like pods that have random things in. It felt so misguided, but stuff like the team mechanics was so good. The idea of being able to pass power ups between each other or steal them off people who are addled with them.
Yeah, it's cool.
To revive players, like, good ideas, terribly implemented.
Yeah.
And number one is Anthem, because the thing with Anthem is that it could have gone in my honorable mention, because did we ever believe it was going to be good?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I
believe in BioWare more than what they were doing, but what do you guys think?
That's it. I held out hope for BioWare. Right. I thought they never really disappointed me yet. I thought Mass Effect 3 was still pretty decent despite the ending. Andromeda was bad, but that was a different team. This was the main team.
Dragon Age Inquisition
back
was
a new IP. Yeah.
It was really good. It was not really good. It was all right.
It was Game of the Year, man.
PT came out in that year. A demo beat it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the best horror games of all time. I mean, it's not really fair to just reductively call it a demo. But anyway, they haven't disappointed yet until Anthem came around and completely crapped the bed. Like you said, all the pre-release trailers looked pretty bad. The guys coming out and just showing a demo of flying was not good or reflective of what you're actually doing. Well, that's because when we found out that we got the game, we found out that there's nothing to actually do. There's just the same mission over and over again. You, that one you mentioned where you have to like check off a lot of boxes to progress the story.
Tomb of the Legionnaires.
Just to extend the life of the game, essentially. And we were talking about The Division and stuff before and having that, you know, repetition of getting good loot and upgrading your gear. Mm-hmm. Anthem doesn't even have that. It has such threadbare loot drops and threadbare customization options that, although the actual gameplay itself is kind of fun, once you've had 2 hours in it, there's not everything.
That's the thing with those games. I think once you've played in those sandboxes for like half an hour or an hour, sometimes I get that feel where I'm like, I've seen everything that this game has. It's just going to keep repeating it, and the numbers are going to go up, and that's it. And sometimes that is the point. That is like the rush. But in Anthem's case, like, the weapons were really lame. It was just really basic Earthbound stuff, which we know from the Kotaku expose that like the team literally said like we didn't know how to design stuff that would be interesting in this regard, because then it's just not their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it was just like basic rifles, shotguns, pistols, stuff that we've used a million times before. And although the combat is like quite meaty, I really like the flight mechanics. Yeah. But then stuff like, well, I like the physics of the flying, but restricting your flying to like 10 seconds is ludicrously dumb. Like, when that game's selling point is, hey, do you want to be Iron Man? And then you're just, you overheat because you're in the sky too long. Like, what is that?
Just fly through some waterfalls, man.
They're never in a position where you can like zip through them. They're always like, it's a waterfall, so it's always got a wall behind it.
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna go like along it, like it's the weirdest thing. Like, just do pockets, do a Sonic underwater pocket of air thing if you need to. Keep me in the sky.
It's a shame as well, because like the environment, I will try to do
thank
that.
You
the environment is like, it's kind of, well, it is so good. I'm just gonna go out there and say that. I was trying to, you know, hold my punches there, but no, it is really good. I love the way you can go from the ground to air to underwater. There's this huge sense of verticality to it. There's just nothing there. It's like, I can't go underwater and explore these caves.
But why would you want to?
You might get another little lore dump that'll tell you about, I can't even think of it, the freelancers.
Yeah, but then again, that's another thing that I absolutely bloody hate, is when games use their lore as rewards. Like, if you're trying to do world building, what's the classic thing? Show, don't tell. Like, why should I have to sit there and read an entire codex to understand the backstory of the world? Yeah. Why not show something like an alien monument or something like that you're like, wow, that's interesting. I wonder what that means.
I was going to say, give me story over mythology. Like, I don't want to read a bunch of codex like you were saying, Jules, just to understand the world when that's not reflected by the game itself. Yeah. Like, they had a great idea about, is it the actual anthem of creation, like the idea that it would change the world, and you read about it, how it's supposed to be this magnificent like event, this earth like world shattering sort of thing that continually changes the environment, but you don't get that in the game. So the mythology is there, but it's not being used to tell a story or make the gameplay any different.
Conceptually, like, I mean, having finished the story, I actually didn't mind the characters. They're very bland, but they were like inoffensively bland. They were like, they were fine. It was just fine. It was like the Power Rangers movie. It was fine. And so, like, stuff like the Anthem of Creation, the idea of like the voice of God, or like the idea of this force that changes everything. It's like, old school BioWare is like somewhat still in there. I don't know if you guys can hear that on the recording, but someone with a very loud car was outside, potentially a bike. But yeah, the whole thing with that, I think they had all these elements that if they just tied them together, like kicking off the ground, inverting yourself, hanging yourself in midair, doing the flight, taking some guys out and using the specials and everything, there's enough there where it's like, you know, there's a playable core, but then everything else was didn't supplant it whatsoever. And then having watched the interview with Greg Miller and I forget the name of the dude he was talking to from the team at E3, when they were supposed to be laying out their roadmap of what's coming, and he just was like, updates are coming, like, you know, like, oh yeah, we're gonna do more sort of DLC. It feels like it's a dead project,
and now they feel like that. It does feel like they've just abandoned it in a sense. It's just like, we'll patch it up and then we'll get it through its year and then we'll just call it quits.
I think because everyone's expecting that they're determined not to, like, I think I imagine if it's on EA's part, they're like, well, we don't want to suffer the really negative press right now, because they put that statement about they don't want to be the bad guy.
Yeah,
and it's just like, well, it seems like that's the thing that they're sort of dancing around at the minute, is if they just sever Anthem, even though it's dead, like, just bury it and put it underground respectfully or whatever. I don't know, what do you guys think? Would you rather they just moved on?
For me personally, I don't think that there's enough of the franchise for me to want to come back. I would be interested in if they ever did an Anthem 2 to do it, but I won't be joining on at this late stage, even if they made huge progress jumps with it. I feel the same way sort of about Fallout 76. I'm going to wait for...
You want to play the Battle Royale, mate?
No, I really don't. I'll wait for about a year and a half, see where the game is and if it has changed enough to be substantial. And, you know, they have said that they're adding in all these things like NPCs and stuff like that, then I might jump back in. I can't say that I will do the same for Anthem, because I don't think the gameplay can change enough for me to be invested.
I'd probably double that as well.
I've seen worse games sort of pull themselves around and kind of like recapture an audience.
No Man's Sky.
It's a very apt point.
No Man's Sky was good at launch.
Yeah, we'll just.
I'm back from my holiday.
I've seen worse games like No Man's Sky pull themselves back around, given enough time and goodwill. And I feel like, although EA might have fumbled this and BioWare Edmonton might have fumbled like developing it, it's not those guys necessarily in charge. It's BioWare Austin has been moved onto the project. I want to see them succeed. I feel like, even in that Kotaku expose, sources were saying that BioWare Austin, who have a history creating an MMO in Star Wars The Old Republic, like, they have experience, they know what they're doing, and apparently they were pitching ideas to the main team and they were just kind of batting them down. So I hope that now they're on board and they have full control, they have the scope to kind of fix it and make it good. For their sake, I want them to turn it around. I don't care about EA if they like recover from a public image perspective. I think their image is kicking on it.
Yeah,
it's beyond the point now, but I want like the guys who are actually working on it to be given a chance.
Yep.
But whether they deserve it, I don't know.
I think them as individuals, as creatives, deserve a shot just based on everything they've worked on in the past. But the BioWare that we know and love, that we grew up with, isn't the same anymore. Like, Casey Hudson's still there, but the vast majority of them have moved on to other projects. So you kind of have to wonder, like, what even... Because even Dragon Age 4, Casey Hudson already said it's going to be a live service game. So it's like, well, you're going to do this all over again. So it just kind of makes me worry about the future of BioWare. I don't think they're ever going to get back to anything remotely worthwhile. But I don't know, what do you think about the next generation in terms of, like, is it going to take a generational shift for them, for everyone to reset their expectations with EA, with BioWare?
I think that in this day and age, everyone is more than entitled, because of the way that games are manufactured, to expect a lot from their games. It comes down to a point of the hype man versus the reality check, and it's a responsibility for a game publisher to make sure that they are selling their product well, but fairly. The amount of times, the only reason that these games are on this list potentially are because they promised something that they couldn't deliver on.
Yeah.
And I don't like the way that they're doing games as a service. I don't like the way that they're saying, well, you'll pay 60 quid for a game and we'll patch it later on. That's not how you should run a business. Yeah. Not how you should run an industry.
I'm hoping that as one of the biggest trends or things that I want to go away next generation, it has to be that idea of taking what should be early access and applying it to the AAA model, where you're still asking for a full premium price and you're still advertising it as finished, and, you know, oh, you can play it 2 days early and like even more money.
Yeah.
And then even that version being, you know, analogous to something that is in actual early access, where it's meant to be a crowdfunded thing or whatever.
Well, I don't think they ever will, because I think the publicity you get from like those day one sales or whatever is far eclipses their desire to be ethical or make the messaging good. But they should be. There's no real excuse. Every console other than really kind of like PlayStation now, like Microsoft have their own early access system. There's no excuse to like not just admit, like, okay, this is like the start. We're going to improve it further down the line, rather than just being like, you know, this is a full price game. You'll get your money's worth. And also, you've got a roadmap, because that never, ever works. Anyone who's ever said they've got a roadmap for something, like you said earlier, has never delivered it. They've always had to fanny about, like, doing patches and actually making the game itself work before delivering the extra content. It's not a whole package supported by some more juicy stuff. Mm. It's like you said, it's an early access thing. It's the beginning of something with the promise that it will get better later. I don't think that can, you can't justify that anymore.
No, I think modern game development doesn't allow for that anymore. Like, they work their asses off to get anything out on launch anyway. Yeah. And it, like, for the most part, the roadmap thing just feels like the new season pass. It's just like, well, we'll get more money out of you up front, and then we'll just cancel the game halfway through the year.
It always blows my mind how it's just, because it only, what it hurts the most is like the most diehard gamers who sort of like buy your products day one, who are excited. Those are the guys you're ultimately failing, because they get the worst version of that experience. Literally. Jules, you were saying if you jump into Fallout 76 a year and a half afterwards, you can pick it up for £10, have all the content, enjoy it for free, and then you're getting the best version of that game, whereas the people who have invested and have actually supported it at launch get a markedly worse version of that game and have to put up with all the crap.
Well, that's what we had in the last podcast. Like, how much value do you put on that like exclusivity window? And like, it's a whole separate conversation that like is for each and each different individual. Like, I like being part of that initial sort of window, but it is becoming increasingly more just stupidly obvious that the first version of a game is by far the worst in literally every single case of games this generation, minus some of the indie stuff. So that's what we've got down for the most disappointing games of the year so far. Let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're on YouTube, or come find us on social media if you're not. For now though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Jules Gill.
Bye guys.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
I'm catching next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.